Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the flag.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me? You don't want to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown. New season streaming June 2nd. Exclusively on Paramount Plus.
CBS Sunday. After the Equalizer.
You collect rewards, right?
This is how I make my living.
It's the season finale.
Everyone's looking for something.
Of Tracker.
You strong swimmer?
So-so.
So-so. So-so's okay.
Justin Hartley stars.
How you survive, you make quick, smart decisions, and you never let panic take the wheel.
Sounds cool.
It is cool, actually. Very cool.
Tracker, CBS season finale Sunday after the Equalizer on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
Hello, and welcome to week two of the college football season and another episode of the Buck Nuts Happy Hour. Thanks for joining us here today to talk a little Buckeyes and some other stuff. This show of the Buck Nuts Happy Hour, sponsored by BetterHelp. Do you ever find that just as you're trying to fall asleep, your brain suddenly won't stop talking? Do your thoughts start racing right before bed or at other inopportune moments? It turns out one great way to make those racing thoughts go away is to talk them through. Therapy gives you a place to do that, so you can get out of your negative thought cycles and find some mental and emotional peace. I can say from personal experience, especially with what I do, covering Ohio State and kind of all the stuff that goes on with that, I often find myself laying in bed at night just thinking about stuff I have to do the next day, whether it be work stuff, personal stuff, what needs to get done. So being able to talk through that stuff is really a great way to kind of get that out of my head, let me get some sleep. Therapy empowers you to be a better version of yourself, something most of us are trying to achieve. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be confidential, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get a break from your thoughts with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/bucknuts today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/bucknuts. And thanks to BetterHelp for sponsoring this show. I am Patrick Murphy. Here for another episode of the Buck Nuts Happy Hour. I'm trying to go to the gym after this, so I do have a White Claw, a pineapple White Claw here for our drink today, but nothing too crazy. It's a Friday, but my Friday is going to start a little bit later today. So we're going to start off talking, looking ahead, really, and talking about Michigan with Youngstown State this week. I figure let's look ahead to some of the more meaningful games. We already did that preseason, talking about Notre Dame. And then we'll dive into some Youngstown State stuff, talking about what we expect from the Buckeyes, what needs to happen from the Buckeyes on Saturday to feel good coming out of this game this weekend. And then I have a new little segment I'm going to do at the end. If you have any questions about the Buckeyes you'd like answered, feel free to throw them in the comment section. I'll remind people throughout. If you're watching this live, we'll try to answer some of those. But let's get into it and let's start our Michigan talk. We're bringing in Alejandro Zuniga from the Michigan Insider, 247 Sports Michigan site. Alejandro and I do a weekly short show for their site where we talk about what's going on with the Buckeyes. So Alejandro is kind enough to join me, and we'll talk a little Michigan. How you doing, Alejandro?
I'm doing great. Happy Friday, man. I
I can't get started as early as you do, but I've got a water, so that counts for something.
There you go. Yeah, this if I just kick this slow, I should be all right. We'll see. It's a noon game tomorrow for the Buckeyes, so nothing too crazy on a Friday night, but we'll still try and have a few. Anyway, let's get into it. I want to start before the season. Obviously, Michigan, back-to-back Big Ten championships. They've beaten Ohio State two straight times, but losing both times in the college football playoff semifinal. So as you kind of looked into this season, maybe in June, July, August, what were kind of your thoughts on what needed to happen for Michigan this year? What are the expectations for this team coming into the season?
I think big picture, if you were to poll Michigan fans, if you were to, even talk to the team, it feels like this is the year, right? In what's happened at the Michigan football program over the last two seasons, you go back to 2020. 2020 was a disaster. Michigan went 2-4. It's a year that anyone associated with the program would like to forget. But over the last two seasons, the level of expectation for Michigan and the level of their success has obviously shot through the roof, right? And it feels like it's all come together this year to where Michigan, not only are they entering the season with Big Ten championship aspirations, but it almost feels like, unlike last year and certainly in 21, like Michigan's the favorites to win the Big Ten this year. They've proven it in back-to-back seasons. And on top of that, they've lost in the college football playoff, in the semifinals the last two seasons, but it feels like the pieces are there that this year they could win that game and that they could compete for a national championship. And I think the reasons for that are, they're multifaceted. Of course, when you're talking about a national championship, so much has to go right for that to happen.
Sure.
State fans know that as well as anybody, but you need good health. You need, the schedule has to break in your favor. You need some bounces to go your way in football games. But then when it comes to personnel, like Michigan has one of the better quarterbacks, certainly one of the better quarterbacks in the Big Ten. Michigan fans would say one of the better quarterbacks in the country with experience returning in JJ McCarthy, has a lot of players who considered the NFL, such as Blake Corum, your Cornelius Johnson, the Zach Zintern, Trevor Keegan on the offensive line, they returned. So it feels like the talent is there. The opportunity is there just looking around the conference, looking around the country. And it's just putting all those pieces together that, Michigan fans expect to be competing in Indianapolis for Big Ten championship. And they do expect to be back in the college football playoff this year.
How big of a shift, what you just said there, the competing for expecting to be in Indy, expecting to be in the playoff, how big of a shift is it? You mentioned that 2020 season, but even before that, it's seemed from an outside perspective, from my perspective, it was kind of resigned to the fact for several years there that regardless of where the game is, the end of the year, Michigan's probably going to lose to Ohio State. Even in the good years, it was, okay, hope to beat Ohio State. Is that kind of the read, and has that shifted as much as it seems?
Yeah, I think that's spot on. It's kind of beyond 2021 was a fever dream for Michigan fans in so many ways, right? It was Ohio State fans, I'm sure, remember this, but there were significant questions about Jim Harbaugh's future at the University of Michigan after the 2020 season. And it wasn't just like this coach might not work out, but like when it's Jim Harbaugh, like Jim Harbaugh was supposed to be the guy, right? It kind of feels like what Scott Frost was supposed to be at Nebraska, where it's like, this is the prodigal son returning, this is the alum, this is the guy who's had success elsewhere. So if this guy can't get it done at Michigan, if Jim Harbaugh can't get it done at Michigan, maybe the reality is that Michigan is always going to be kind of the underdog in the Ohio State rivalry. Maybe Michigan isn't the program that can expect to be competing for Big Ten championships consistently anymore. So 2021 it was a fever dream. It was just that Ohio State game. The way it all came together, I don't think anyone believed it was real until the clock read all zeros, because there have been, so many times in the recent past, even where it's felt like Michigan had a chance and it got ripped away. And, a lot of it, of course, Michigan fans are going to point to Jim Harbaugh, and a lot of the focus across the country is always on Jim Harbaugh. But it really, it goes back to the players, right? And I was thinking about this last night, watching Aiden Hutchinson for the Detroit Lions, making a huge impact in that NFL opener against the Kansas City Chiefs, is that, Aiden Hutchinson is a Michigan football legend and deservedly so, but I don't think he gets enough credit even among Michigan fans for how much he as an individual pushed the program forward. Because certainly after the 2020 season, Michigan, they fired a lot of coaches. They brought in a lot of younger coaches. You know, Jim Harbaugh kind of reinvented the program. But so much of that was player driven, and so much of that was Aiden Hutchinson and Hassan Haskins and Josh Ross, and a bunch of other leaders on that 21 team that have changed the trajectory of a program from, just a huge question mark and maybe resigned to always to losing, 8 out of 10 years to Ohio State, to all of a sudden, we Michigan could take over this rivalry and, set it in a different direction for a few years.
Yeah, it really occurred to me looking back after that 2021 game when we were in Indianapolis for Big Ten Media Days that year, the Michigan players talking about how the focus had shifted. They were doing specific things, beat Ohio State periods and stuff like that, that I think Ohio State had been doing for quite some time. Jim Tressel and Urban Meyer stressed that significantly. But, in retrospect, it seemed to me that that's kind of where the shift was. Obviously, you had to get to that game in the position to win the Big Ten and be in the college football playoff. But having that mentality changed, I think, is that how you would look at it too? That like, okay, we're not only going to think about beating Ohio State the week leading up to it, we're going to think about this all year, and that kind of elevates the entire program, right?
Yeah, yes and no. I mean, I think if you go back to Brady Hoke, Brady Hoke, of course, had massive respect for the Ohio State game, right? Sure. To the point where, they'd probably yell at me if I wore this to a press conference because it's the color red and, wouldn't say Ohio State, you'd just say Ohio. And, that's something that's sort of carried on. So it's, and, even with, under the first few years under Jim Harbaugh, right? Like one of the really iconic memories I have of when Jim Harbaugh was hired at Michigan is, he participated in this, cemetery walk the night before the first Ohio State game, where Michigan fans traditionally would go to the graves of, Bo Schembechler and other Michigan legends on campus. And, it's sort of a way to pay respect. So it's not like, it's not like there was never respect for the rivalry or understanding that, it's the most important game on the schedule every year. I think it just came to a point where the Michigan players got sick of losing. And after the 2020 season, in 2020, there were many players who sat out because it was the COVID year. It's very understandable. But after that 2020 season, there was a big shift both in coaches, but also a lot of players transferred out. And it sort of felt, in retrospect, what players have said is, the guys who stuck around, the guys who were going to put in the work were the ones who were sick of losing and who were, dedicated to changing the program for the better. And that's what happened. I don't think it's so much that all of a sudden, oh, holy crap, we play Ohio State at the end of the year. What a surprise. They always knew that. Yeah. It's always been that way. Hopefully it'll always continue to be that way, but it was we're sick of losing and we, we have the personnel to win this game. And finally, Michigan was able to pull it together and do it. And I think it took doing it. You had to do it to prove you could. And they finally did.
What about coming to Columbus last year and doing it there? I think that's a whole different story, right? Not only doing it and doing it twice, but doing it on the other team's home field. How much did that kind of enhance what you're saying that you're really on a trajectory here, not just it was 1 year and now we're back to kind of how things were.
Yeah, it was last year was prove it, right? And that was the preseason talk before the 2022 season was, listen, so many people from Columbus, from across, it was like, you can always beat a team once, right? Appalachian State can come to the Big House and beat Michigan. Are they going to do it? Actually, that's probably a bad example because Appalachian State played a great game and Michigan was totally unprepared for that. But, upsets happen, right? And it was, you know, maybe Ohio State had the flu. Maybe, you know, maybe the weather was so much worse than it looked. Maybe it was a blizzard. Who knows, right? And it was at home and it was two talented teams. So 2022 was like, prove it, you know, if it's really true that you can win the Big Ten and reach the college football playoff running kind of like an NFL, like pro style, we're going to run the ball. We're going to go play action. And, you know, we're going to trust that this defensive scheme can slow down the most potent offense in college football. You know, you could do it at home when the weather wasn't great and maybe the opponent wasn't at 100% health wise. You know, prove it on the road. And not only did they do that, they did so probably more convincingly. I mean, certainly the margin of victory was better. They proved it. So that's, you know, when I'm talking about that Michigan fans expect that they're making the college football playoff again this year, that's exactly the reason why, is they've done it 2 years in a row against Ohio State. They beat Penn State on the road in 21. They dominated Penn State at home last year. And you're just looking around the Big Ten saying, okay, where are the returning quarterbacks? You know, where is the returning production at the level of Michigan? It's not there. And Michigan is the back-to-back Big Ten champion. So, like,
right.
Why not?
All right. So let's stop talking about the past before every Ohio State fan gets sick. And
no, this is great. I'm sure, you know, viewership numbers are through the roof right now, Patrick.
Let's look at this season. You talked about kind of the overall expectations. If there was an area of concern you had coming into the season for this Wolverines team, what is it? And maybe, I know we're only 1 week in, but like, how do you feel at this point?
I mean, I'll take the second question first, which is, I don't know. Okay. And that's, it's the unfortunate, self-inflicted somewhat, kind of, that's the reality of the last 2 years, right? Is that Michigan has not played a Power Five opponent in the non-conference season. So last year when Michigan went on the road to face Iowa, in the Big Ten opener, it was like, you've faced, it was UConn, Colorado State and Hawaii. Like, you don't know. And same this year, you know, Michigan faced East Carolina last week. East Carolina was a team that lost so much and is really rebuilding its program. And they face UNLV this week and then Bowling Green next week. So, you know, Michigan's going to arrive at the Big Ten schedule with not question marks, but just, you know, with the reality that they haven't really gone toe to toe with anyone who can compete with them physically. From a personnel perspective. So going into the season, where the question marks were and where the question marks sort of remain, the corner position. You know, Michigan had a very talented freshman corner last year in Will Johnson, you know, five-star for Michigan. He came on throughout the season, played very well against Ohio State, had two interceptions in the Big Ten championship game against Purdue. He returns this year, but he's been dinged up through fall camp. He did not play in the last game. And the second cornerback spot is sort of an open, at least through the offseason, was sort of an open question. You know, Michigan brought in a transfer from UMass, Josh Wallace, who had a very acrobatic near interception last game. But again, you know, he looks good against East Carolina. How's that gonna continue throughout the season against better, more talented opponents?
Right.
So that's number one. I'd say the corner spot, it's a bit of a question mark. From, you know, Michigan is breaking in like a new third receiver, in Tyler Morris, again, a guy who was dinged up through fall camp, didn't play in week one. And I think, yeah, as Michigan is replacing Ronnie Bell, who was the team's leading receiver, pretty sure the last three years that he was healthy. It's not only replacing his receiving production, but the fact that he was an excellent outside blocker. And when you're looking at Michigan's starting receivers, Cornelius Johnson, Roman Wilson, and then a sophomore in Tyler Morris, you know, you need them to be above average blockers to do the sort of things that Michigan likes to do on the ground. That's something that didn't really, you know, the ground game didn't look that good against East Carolina, all things considered. I mean, East Carolina did stack the box, but it's still East Carolina. You expect Michigan to be able to run the ball with authority, and they weren't able to do that. So it's like, those are the sort of question marks that I have heading into this week, heading into, you know, Bowling Green next week. again, I don't know how well those are going to be answered, just given the level of competition.
Mentioning that competition, just I wasn't going to ask you this, but since you brought it up, is Michigan scheduled to play anybody of note in the future? Like, is that – I haven't looked at their future schedules, but this just occurred to me.
It gets a lot more interesting very quickly.
Okay.
Texas, there's a home-and-home with Texas coming up, and that starts next year. There was one with Oklahoma, too. That one may have been canceled. I don't remember that off the top of my head. Michigan was supposed to play UCLA this year or last year, maybe both. They ended up scrapping that because Michigan wanted to have more home games, essentially, when the Big Ten, you know, shifted its conference schedules with COVID. And there was supposed to be a Washington game there's a Washington game, there's a home and home that got scrapped, at least the away portion of it during COVID. So, you know, part of it has been schedule wise, like part of it's self-inflicted, part of it's just, you know, the realities of the college football landscape have changed. It's a bummer for fans, honestly. I'm not going to complain, but like, listen, game one, always fun because it's college football's back. You know, there's going to be, you know, the second game could be interesting too, but like, yeah, by the third non-conference game against an opponent that's going to be a 5-touchdown underdog, it's like, all right, let's get to real football already, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I've felt that before with Ohio State's schedule. Even years where they do have a marquee opponent coming, you know, third or fourth week or whatever it is, just some of those first games. Even as a fan watching just college football in general, like you want to get to those conference games, right? Just exciting, more exciting. You mentioned that run game that didn't really get going last week. In your mind, why wasn't – I mean, I think that's just been so talked about as, okay, Michigan probably has the two best running backs in the Big Ten, or at least they're in the conversation for it coming into the season. What happened last week for Buckeye fans that didn't watch that game that maybe – you mentioned stacking the box, but you'd still think Michigan would be able to run. So what kind of went down in that game?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's multiple aspects to it. So number one, both Blake Corum and Donovan Edwards, the two Michigan running backs, both of them were coming off of off-season surgeries, off-season injuries. I mean, injuries, certainly Blake Corum, obviously, last November. Neither of them really got hit a ton during fall camp. I mean, Michigan's running back coach, Mike Hart, kind of flat out said, listen, we know what these guys can do in games, so we're not going to expose them to more hits, more wear and tear during fall camp. And I think particularly for Blake Corum, like he looked a little bit rusty. You know, it looked like he maybe hadn't been hit and he was getting hit for the first time. So I think that's part of it. East Carolina certainly stacked the box. They played a lot of cover zero. They had their safeties lined up very close to the line of scrimmage. They were run blitzing on and on and on. You know, there's a reason why JJ McCarthy had his best day as a passer. He set a program record, in fact, for completion percentage for someone with 25 or more pass attempts. And the reason for that, at least in part, was East Carolina was run blitzing. And anytime Michigan ran play action, you know, JJ had a guy with a very open throwing window to put a ball into. And I think that's something that Michigan has to be cognizant of, right? Is that the Big Ten has spent its offseason kind of game planning, stopping Michigan's running game. I'm sure we've talked about this, is that Ohio State needs to be more physical on the lines of scrimmage. You know, it's all about competition for Ohio State this year. And I think you'll see that across the Big Ten is, you know, teams evolve, teams realize, you know, teams spend time figuring out how to stop the, you know, the quote unquote top dog. You know, teams are going to be trying to stop Michigan's base running plays and Michigan needs to adapt to that. And then the final aspect is, you know, Michigan, while they have talent across the offensive line, they are replacing the Remington Trophy winner, the Outland Trophy winner, who is the center, Olu Oluwatimi, also replacing their left tackle. You know, Michigan's coaches will tell you that they have four starting caliber tackles, including a couple who are transfer portal pickups. Michigan coaches have been very excited about the center in Drake Nugent, who also an incoming transfer. But the reality is that, you know, you're breaking in two or three new starters on the offensive line. They've been rotating those guys. They've been rotating them throughout fall camp. So I don't think they're fully gelled into what that unit's going to look like. You know, they don't even have their starters kind of figured out. And that's one of the benefits, I guess, of having three, you know, quote unquote preseason games.
Yeah, that definitely helps. You've mentioned JJ McCarthy a few times. I think he's one of the more interesting players on Michigan's roster from an outside perspective. You saw him a little bit as a freshman. I think last year, obviously, the numbers look good. I know there were some ups and downs with him once he won the job. What do you see as kind of his ceiling? I know he was a five-star kid coming out of high school. You know, what can he become for this program, and how much, if he becomes that ceiling, does that elevate Michigan's offense?
So I think from a physical perspective, you know, from a talent perspective, you know, JJ McCarthy is a guy who can be a first-round draft pick. What that looks like for Michigan depends a lot on what Michigan's coaches decide the offense is going to be, right? You know, Michigan and, you know, fans across the Big Ten saw what Michigan's been for the last two seasons, which is, you know, they're going to run the ball until the run is stopped. And it turns out that most teams couldn't stop the run. So JJ McCarthy never really had to throw the ball.
Yeah.
I think there are a few things in JJ's favor coming into this season that portend well for a breakout season. So number one, you know, last season, he did not enter the 2022 season as Michigan starter, right? Cade McNamara was the starter in week one. He was the guy who took starters reps all throughout spring ball and fall camp. So JJ McCarthy was, you know, he took over the starting job, but he was the backup all throughout practice. He also was dealing with a shoulder injury last offseason that limited his ability to build up rapport with his wide receivers. So I think some of the struggles that JJ had last year could probably be attributed to that. This year, you know, JJ comes in as a starter. He's been healthy all offseason. He's got a really close relationship with his quarterback coach, who's a new QB coach in Kirk Campbell. He's the guy who called plays last week as Jim Harbaugh and Sharon Moore were both suspended. He's gotten bigger. He's gotten stronger. He said he's gotten faster. We haven't really gotten a chance to see that. But I think Michigan fans kind of expect that in year three of him in the program, year two of him starting, he's had a full offseason both as the number one guy and healthy. And he's got a quarterback coach who he seems to really vibe with, is that he can take that next step of, you know, he's always had all the talent, you know, he's always had the arm strength. He's always had the speed. It's more, you know, the decision-making and, you know, really hitting the deep balls, which he really struggled with at times last year.
Last thing I want to ask you, and you and I actually talked about this when we were at Big Ten Media Days, when we were out for dinner that night, covering Jim Harbaugh. I think, you know, definitely from an Ohio State perspective, but you know, I think the things that always make headlines are like the oddball things that he says, right? And he's such an interesting guy. It really stood out to me at Big Ten Media Days, and he was talking about, I forget what the question was, but he talked about how, you know, you lease a position, right? You don't own it, mm-hmm. and like and the bill comes every month. And I thought that was a really interesting way to put that, like, if you can't pay the rent, somebody else will, and they'll take your spot. And I always find some of the stuff he says interesting. There's also the kind of strange stuff that always stands out to me early on in his Michigan tenure, the interview he did with Colin Cowherd that was just very awkward. So you're there on a day-to-day basis. What's kind of your thoughts on what it's been like to cover this guy who obviously has turned things around and really – built this program back up, as we were talking about earlier, into a nationally relevant national championship type of contender?
First, before I answer that question, I think I need to issue a correction to myself, is that I've been talking about the Michigan, you know, offense and defense. But the reality is that it's all a we-fence, right?
Right. Right.
That was this week's quote. No offense, no defense, just a we-fence. That should be pulled straight out of Ted Lasso, like that somehow. That was like a deleted scene from Ted Lasso. It's fun. You know, I've talked to Jim Harbaugh about this myself, right? Is, you know, I've had the good fortune of traveling, if you know, following the Michigan football team as it's taken summer trips. And in those situations, I have a chance to talk one-on-one with Jim Harbaugh, you know, not interviewing him and, nice. You know, not having him in front of, you know, 20 reporters at a press conference. And it, I think from what other, like from what the outside people see, you see someone who's like corny and kind of forced and weird in ways that are like grating and annoying. But from covering Jim Harbaugh, you know, I was there when he stepped foot in Michigan for the first time. Right. And so I've kind of been with that program kind of the whole way, and it's just who he is. And that's kind of what that's what you learn at the end of it, is that he's not saying these things because he's trying to be cute or saying these things because he's trying to be funny. It's just, I don't know if it's that he doesn't realize it's funny. I think that's part of it. He's just a guy who is so heavily invested in football that anything to that end does not strike him as weird, mm-hmm. right? Is that if, you know, if the NCAA laws permit, you know, this is the amount of time you're allowed to spend with a recruit, then he's going to maximize the amount of time he's going to spend with that recruit. And oh crap, it turns out that blows up as Jim Harbaugh is having a sleepover at some guy's house. You know, and if it's, you know, Jim Harbaugh is wearing his cleats into some goods, cause he's just always wears his cleats everywhere. And, you know, the guy, the freshman on campus last year, who Jim Harbaugh was happiest with, was a freshman who went to class in his football pads and his tape and his cleats so that he could miss as little time as possible getting onto the practice field. You know, he's just a guy who, he's just like kind of all about football in ways that kind of like diminish his like social awareness, if that makes sense, or like the way that he's perceived. And so that makes him, you know, from a coverage perspective, it's a little bit aggravating at times, because, you know, he's not super comfortable at a press conference always. He's not super, you know, friendly or open always, but you know, what you get with him is kind of sincere, even if it comes across as weird. I kind of word vomited a lot there, but it's funny to see the external reactions to Jim Harbaugh, because you do see kind of the frustration, and it's, I think part of it's similar to what's going to happen to Deion Sanders, is like there's a lot of oversaturation of a personality.
Yeah.
And I don't know Deion, and I, you know, so I can't speak to him, but for Jim Harbaugh, like it's just sincerely who he is, and it is sincerely a little bit weird. But it's not an act. It's just him.
Makes sense. All right, Alejandro, I've already kept you longer than I said I was going to, so thank you very much. Next time you're on, we'll throw a little soccer talk in there to really bore people.
All right, I will bring so many takes about the state of Costa Rican soccer and the Costa Rican national team. I hope you're ready, Bucknuts.
All right. Well, thank you again. I appreciate it. Obviously a busy time, so I appreciate you taking time out.
All right, peace.
We'll talk soon. Thanks again to Alejandro Zuniga of our Michigan site, the Michigan Insider on 247 Sports. Obviously a rivalry there, right? But they do good work. If you're looking for any insight on Michigan throughout the season, check out Alejandro, Zach, all those guys over there, their work. I think they do a really good job. So that's where you can find Michigan content if you need it. I don't know if you do. Maybe, maybe not. All right, so part of the reason I wanted to talk Michigan this week is because, A, we've been sort of previewing some of these bigger teams. We may do some Penn State here in a week or so. But also, look, Ohio State plays Youngstown State this week. And I know Buckeye fans weren't overly thrilled with the result, the final score, some of the things that happened against Indiana in week one. But this game should be one of those games, as Steve Hellwagen, my colleague, put it earlier this week. This should be a get-right game. Whatever you want to call it, this game should be one that Ohio State wins pretty comfortably, and everyone should come out feeling pretty good afterwards, right? If they don't, we're going to have a very different conversation next week, and you know, there may be more concerns. But because of that, I didn't think we need to dive too much into Youngstown State, but I do want to talk about what the Buckeyes need to do coming off of that week one win in week two against a team that you should just defeat handedly because of the talent discrepancy, an FCS opponent, what they need to do to have us all feeling good coming out of that week. You know, after this, there's only one game between Ohio State's game with Notre Dame at Notre Dame in a few weeks. So you want to start to build some good habits, get some positivity going, if nothing more, and, you know, kind of fix some things that weren't great against Indiana and enhance the things that were good, because you obviously know you're going to face bigger challenges along the way, right? And before I get into those, reminder, if you have questions about the Buckeyes, if you're watching this on the live stream, throw those into the chat here. I'll try and answer some of those at the end. And we'll also do a quick new segment that I'm going to try and do weekly at the end of this too. So something else that I think will be interesting. But the first thing I think is the most obvious when it comes to Ohio State this week, and it's starting to get some sense of what's going on with the quarterbacks, right? You know that they're going to play both guys, or at least that's what they said coming out of week one. That was the plan in week one, frankly. And we didn't see much of Devin Brown, only 6 snaps. He attempted 3 passes. It wasn't the performance that we thought, where maybe it was almost going to be like a split between the two. I personally expected Kyle McCord to play the majority of the snaps, but I definitely expected Devin Brown to play more. So this week, I also expect Devin Brown to play more. How many? We did, if you haven't seen it, we started this new thing on Bucknuts. We're doing over-unders for each week's game, and one of them this week was Devin Brown, 25 snaps. I picked the over. I don't know if I feel great about that, and not more so because I think Ohio State will be up big and will roll, and then you get, you know, Tristan Jebbia and maybe even freshman Lincoln Kindholz into the game. But you definitely need to see more from Devin Brown in this game, and you need to let him run the offense, not just hand the ball off twice and have a quarterback run that was pretty easy to snuff out by Indiana. So I think you've got to see both quarterbacks, and you want to feel good about both quarterbacks. I think heard all offseason, I've talked about it. I know other people have talked about it, that there's a feeling among the Ohio State coaches, the Ohio State players, that they can win with either guy, that both guys talented. Well, you want to see that if you're a Buckeye fan, right? You want to feel, okay, if we go into that Notre Dame game and both guys end up playing for whatever reason, they're going to be fine. And, you know, just like Kyle McCord can do it, Devin Brown can do it. Maybe it doesn't look exactly the same. And yes, it's Youngstown State, but look, I went and I saw Devin Brown and Kyle McCord both make some really nice throws, put the ball on the money. I saw, you know, Devin Brown scramble for a nice gain. Like, those type of things should happen against Youngstown State. You should be able to do that. You want to get them comfortable. Now, how they do it, I think, is going to be very interesting. And I think it was kind of the dilemma Ryan Day found himself in. Dilemma Ryan Day, frankly, has kind of put himself in by going this direction with not naming a starter. You have to figure out when to get the other guy in the game. And, you know, they weren't going to go series by series. They didn't have a set plan. Now, Ryan Day did say, you know, maybe the third and the sixth series if things went, but his gut told him, you know, Kyle McCord needed to get into more of a rhythm. So, you know, you can understand a little bit of that with the way that game played out. But you also, you need to figure out a way to get both these guys in, let both these guys run the first team offense. So you know what you've got in game situations. And if you're Ohio State fans, you want to see that play out. That's I think, priority number one in this game. And then priority 1B, and maybe even in my mind, a bigger one is this offensive line should dominate this game. There's no reason to think that there should be issues. They say that the biggest jump you make usually is from week one to week two during college football season. The offensive line needs to make a jump. Now they've got film. They've got ways that they can, you know, they've got things that they saw on film that they can look at and kind of develop from, learn from. You need to see a step taken, especially against what is clearly an inferior opponent. You know, a guy like Josh Simmons, he played well at San Diego State last year, right? So now he needs to show that next step. He looked okay against a Big Ten team last week. Indiana does some different things that are interesting. Tom Allen's always brought some pressure in interesting ways, and even good Ohio State offensive linemen have had some struggles with that. I wasn't pleased entirely with what Josh Simmons showed at left tackle, but you need to see him take a step, right? You need to see Carson Hinsman take a step. I thought it was good that he played well enough in terms of snapping the ball and things like that. There were no mistakes there. That's a good start for a first-time starting center, a guy who's playing his first football. But, you know, some of the communication, some of the blocking stuff, he can still improve on. Josh Fryer was the only guy who graded out as champion, but I think he can still play better there. I thought Matthew Jones played pretty well. Donovan Jackson was actually the guy that surprised me the most that did not play as well as I expected him to. I think that, you know, from a guy who was all Big Ten last year, you thoroughly expect him to play better. And that's got to be the case in this game for sure, playing against a Youngstown State team. So I think you got to come out of this game feeling, okay, this offensive line has made a taken a step, right? You can't just, you know, it can't be like a slow build from last week. This is an inferior opponent, more so than Indiana is, just in terms of pure talent. You should be able to handle whatever Youngstown State throws at you. This starting five needs to look good, or else I'm going to have some more questions about a group that I already have a lot of questions about. I think you also, you know, and this goes hand in hand with the quarterback play, you want to feel good about the receivers that you felt good about coming into the season. Marvin Harrison Jr. and Emeka Egbuka, two of the most talented receivers in the country, they combined for 5 receptions for 34 yards. That's not good enough. No, certainly not. Now, there were some reasons for that, obviously. Indiana tried to take Marvin Harrison Jr. away. Those are the guys they're focusing on. I get all that. But you have to find ways to get those guys the ball. And it shouldn't be that complicated against teams like this. If we're talking about Penn State, if we're talking about, you know, insert some of the bigger challenges down the road for Ohio State. If we're talking about those teams and they're starting to take those guys away, then fine. I can see that. And then you need your other guys to step up like Cade Stover and Julian Fleming did. But if we're talking about Indiana, we're talking about Youngstown State, you know, these are games where they should put up big numbers. This is what top receivers do. And, you know, some of that, when it comes to Marvin Harrison, you know, who was targeted 8 times, there were some off throws. There was the pass interference call. Obviously, his numbers look better. If that touchdown catch, he doesn't go out of bounds beforehand, which Ryan Day said this week that the Big Ten officials told them shouldn't have been a penalty because he was pushed apparently enough to not draw a flag, though I thought he had time to A, avoid going out of bounds, and B, get back in bounds quicker, but I'm no official. But you need these guys, and it doesn't even have to be a huge day because they shouldn't be in the game all that long, but it certainly should be a better performance than it was a week ago. And you know that has to happen. Defensive side of the ball, I think things were pretty good. I think that, Indiana obviously didn't challenge Ohio State much. They didn't do much in the way of throwing the ball until the fourth quarter when they did most of their passing. But you still need to build on what you were able to do. And I think assuming that Youngstown State doesn't adopt the Indiana offense of triple option, I think you want to see more pressure put on the quarterback. Now, Jim Knowles was fairly happy with the defensive line and what they were able to do given the offense they were facing. He talked about, especially the interior of the defensive line, the way they shut down some of the run stuff that Indiana wanted to do. And I do think that's a positive. So build on that, get more pressure on the quarterback and drop back passing situations. JT Tuimoloau and Jack Sawyer need to be dominant this year. It's just a fact. They don't have to be the best in the country, but they need to be significantly better. So I think you want to see more of that in a game where you're playing an offensive line that you should be able to do a lot against. I thought the linebacker play was very solid last week. The secondary wasn't really tested. So I don't know if Youngstown State has the horses to test them in a way that, you know, we'll be this game being like, wow, Denzel Burke looks like an All-American and what a transfer Davis and Igbinosin was and those type of things. But I certainly think that this is a team that should throw the ball a little bit more, which means, okay, are you in the right positions? Are you making the plays when they're there? And we saw a little bit of that. I thought Denzel Burke, when he was targeted, did that. I would have liked to see a little bit more from Davison Igbinosin. I think he allowed the most catches of the starting three cornerbacks, for the most yards. So you would like to just see them be in the right positions, you know, turning their head when they're supposed to, knocking balls down. Hey, how about an interception, right? We haven't seen one of those from a cornerback, an Ohio State cornerback, since 2021. This would be a good time to kind of get off on the right footing and, you know, have an interception, force a turnover, whatever it may be. You have this opportunity this week, I think. The safety play, I think, was pretty good. I want to see kind of how it looks again this week, especially at that adjuster position. Josh Proctor started the game, played into the second half. I think he played through the first series of the second half. And then Malik Hartford came in, played the rest of the game. Freshman, thought he played well. For both of them, I think it's important to have good second games. And if Jahad Carter can work his way back in, he didn't play at all against Indiana, a guy that I think most of us thought would be the starter at least one of these safety spots. But I think it's important, at least for Proctor and Hartford, to build on those. You know, Josh Proctor has not had the best luck early in seasons the last couple of years, broke his leg in 2021 in that Oregon game in week two. And then obviously last year was benched after that opening series when Notre Dame hit the big play on his mistake and kind of never really recovered from that. Lathan Ransom took over at the bandit position. So, you know, if you're Josh Proctor, can you build on what was a pretty solid first game? If you're Malik Hartford, can you build on what was a pretty solid debut? I think those are important for, you know, confidence at the very least going forward here. And, you know, just knowing that this defense is moving in the right direction. Again, none of these things should be a challenge for Ohio State. You should be comfortably winning. I thought it was really interesting as we're driving back from Indiana last Sunday, listening to college sports radio on SiriusXM. You know, Ohio State's getting docked from winning by 20 points on the road against a conference opponent, but you're getting credit for what Washington did against, I think it was Portland State, or, you know, these schools that, like Youngstown State this week, don't offer much. I mean, Oregon puts up 81 points, you know, like, some of these schools were putting up huge numbers against nobody. That's what Ohio State should do this week. And look, I don't think Ohio State should get a ton of credit if they do that. Now, if they don't, then I think we're having a different conversation next week. But if this is a 50-point game, which I don't think is out of the question for most people at this point, you know, you're not going to get a ton of credit for it, but you want to see things continue to go in a positive direction when you're playing teams that you know you should beat. And now you have week one to build off of. I think it's important, all of those things I talked about. And I think you can go, you know, I didn't even mention the running backs, continuing to see how that rotation plays out. You know, Chip Traynham was the best of the group, no doubt, last week. You know, does that change things in terms of the pecking order? He was the second guy in the game after Travion Henderson. Travion Henderson, I continue to say, has the most talent on the team, but the production just simply hasn't been there. So does that change anything? I'll be interested to see that. So yeah, I think, as much as this game could be over after, you know, a quarter and a half or something along those lines, I think there are still some pretty interesting things, especially on the offensive side of the ball, but on the defense as well, that you know, need to happen for Ohio State, for Buckeye fans to feel good going into week three and obviously week four when you go to Notre Dame. So take a quick drink here. Cheers. On to this new segment I want to do, and this is nothing original. I've seen a lot of seen this used TV, radio, podcast before, but basically what I'm calling this, what you'll be reading. And basically the idea here is kind of what will be the headline, the story when you know, Saturday afternoon, Saturday evening, after we get done with media availability following the game, or Sunday morning, a lot of times will be the case, what you'll be reading. And it'll just be one kind of headline topic that I think will come out of this game going forward. And I think this week it's going to be the Marvin Harrison bounce back game. And I touched on it a little bit earlier. He finished last week's game with two catches for 18 yards, despite eight targets. Again, could have been better if he stays in bounds. He got interfered with on one play. There certainly could have been some throws that were put more on the money that would have made his day look better. But to me, that's going to be the story coming out of this one. I think he has not a huge day because, again, I don't think he's going to be in the game. I think if things go according to plan, maybe he doesn't even play in the second half because, you know, what do you need Marvin Harrison to prove in the second half of a blowout game? No, get these other receivers in there. Get the young guys in. Let Carnell Tate get into a rhythm, those type of guys. But I do think he could have something like 5 or 6 catches for 80, 90, maybe even, you know, if he has a big play, 100 yards and 2 touchdowns. And all of a sudden, you know, we're putting last week behind us. Regardless of who the quarterback is throwing those passes, it's like, all right, you know, there's nothing to worry about with Marvin Harrison Jr. Not that I think anyone's worried about him now, but I did see a lot of talk this week about, you know, could this offense affect Marvin Harrison Jr. if it doesn't, you know, click in the gear? And frankly, I think most D1 Power 5 quarterbacks, starting quarterbacks, could Marvin Harrison look good just getting the ball in his vicinity. So I'm not worried about that. If it's Kyle McCord, if it's Devin Brown, I think coming out of this week's game, people are going to feel a lot better. And on Saturday night, Sunday morning, whenever it is, you're reading the headlines on Bucknuts, seeing Marvin Harrison bounces back, big day versus Penguins. Maybe there's a better headline there. I'm not good at headlines, but something, you get what I'm saying, something along those lines. I think he is due here. I certainly think he'll be motivated. I think Ohio State will, you know, want to get him the ball. And I think in a home game against an FCS school, you know, maybe last week, yeah, you targeted him 8 times, but maybe next week you will feel, you know, maybe this week, I'm sorry, you can, okay, we're going to get the ball to Marvin. Let's get him some stats. Let's get this kind of rolling, you know, guy who people have talked about for the Heisman. In a game on the road against Indiana, maybe you don't feel as comfortable of taking some of those risks or whatnot to force things, and you take what's there. This week, I think it's going to be different. He has a good game. Numbers look good. People feel good about him going into next week. All right, we've only got a couple questions I've seen so far. If you have any more, if you're still watching this live with us, if you have any more, throw them in the chat here. I'll try and answer a few before we get out of here. But Nick Williams asked earlier on, has there been any more that has come out about Brian Hartline calling the plays? Only in the sense that he is not calling them as of right now. And look, he's involved. He's on the headset. He's talking, you know, he's involved in the pregame stuff. He's involved on the game day, you know, during the game, all that. But from my understanding, you know, it's still Ryan Day handling the final decision on play calls, at least right now. Maybe that's not true every single play. Maybe if Ohio State, you know, certain situations, maybe they let Hartline do some play calling and things like that. But for the vast majority of things, it's the Ryan Day show still. And I think that makes a lot of sense. Look, if Kirk Herbstreit doesn't mention in the Rose Bowl pregame show or the whatever it was where he mentioned that Ryan Day was considering giving up play calling, I don't think this is a topic of conversation. I think it was a bigger topic of conversation when you had a guy like Kevin Wilson, who had called plays before at a high level on the staff. You know, if Ryan Day doesn't bring it up, are people suggesting that Ryan Day give up play calling to Brian Hartline, who's literally never done it before? I don't think so. Even if you're frustrated with Ryan Day's play calling, you know, it's only one game back to the Georgia game where I think most people would agree Ryan Day called a pretty damn good game, and he's got, you know, a pretty good track record of that. So, you know, does Hartline call plays down the road, maybe later this season, maybe next season? Yeah, I think that's the idea, is, you know, you slowly work him in, especially, and I've said this a lot, especially because you've got a new quarterback, you've got a new offensive line. You don't want to add another new ingredient into that mix unless you have to. And right now you don't have to. You have Ryan Day, who built his reputation on developing quarterbacks, calling plays. And so, yeah, I think there's going to be opportunities for Brian Hartline to continue to grow in that department. I think he's learning a lot right now. He obviously got to do some stuff in the offseason, spring practice when they scrimmaged, the spring game, the scrimmages that Ohio State had before the season. But right now, look, it wouldn't make sense to move that on from Ryan Day, given kind of the situation Ohio State's in, at least in my mind. We'll see. Anthony Lightfoot, grade the coach's performance last week. I won't go coach by coach, just so I don't bore you, but kind of overall, offensively, you know, B minus. I don't think, you know, you go to Indiana and only score 23 points and feel like that was a great coaching performance. I think, you know, there's obviously some reasons that they were a bit more conservative with the new offensive line, a new quarterback, all that. I think that, you know, you can understand that, but that doesn't mean that they always put themselves in the best position. I think some of the run plays were strangely called. The quarterback draw with Kyle McCord, well, if it works, we're talking about how great it was. That's not a guy who runs the ball a lot. Defensively, well, I will say I liked what they did with the running backs, and I think Tony Alford did a good job there. You know, I still think offensive line, they need to be better, frankly, and that's on Justin Fry, and that'll continue. And then defensively, I think everything was pretty solid. You know, overall, while Indiana didn't test them a ton, I would say like A minus, B plus. And with an opportunity to see that grade continue to go up, as the challenges get higher and whatnot, get more difficult. So, you know, it was an opener. And I think a lot of times in openers, you don't grade out great. You would like to have both sides A plus, every coach A plus, all that. Players grading out as champion just doesn't always happen, right? And that's, you know, you look around the country, you don't have to look far. Clemson, Duke. I know Duke's a better team than Indiana and whatnot, but you go on the road, you find a way to win. And I think there is something to that. I know that's kind of coach speak, but, you know, I do think that in from that perspective, they did what they set out to do. Could the coaching be better? Absolutely. Should it be better this week? Absolutely. Against a team like Youngstown State. So I hope that answers that question. All right, we're going to wrap this one up. I want to thank Alejandro for jumping on from our Michigan 247 sports site. If you missed any of that, go back. He discussed kind of where the Wolverines are as kind of we look at some of these marquee opponents that are coming for Ohio State before we really get into those down the road. Thank him for coming on. And I think we had a good little chat here about what the Buckeyes need to get accomplished this week. Despite being, you know, I haven't seen the numbers. I know they didn't have odds out for a while. 40 plus, I have to imagine, point favorites. So we'll be there on Saturday. Stay tuned for our coverage throughout the game. There'll still be more stuff on Bucknuts Friday afternoon, evening, high noon kickoff. So early morning for us, which, you know, gets the day done. But we'll be there. Watch out for Dave. As soon as the game ends, he will be right back here doing the What We Learned live. Steve and I will jump on that once we're done in the post game. So check that out and stay tuned for Bucknuts. Please like, subscribe on wherever you get your podcasts. Like our YouTube page. It all helps us out, and we appreciate that. And we'll see you on Saturday, Buckeye fans. Cheers.
Every sport has their big, juicy controversy. Boxing has the Mike Tyson ear bite. Cycling has Lance Armstrong. Baseball has its steroid era. Curling has Broomgate. It's a story of broken relationships, houses divided, corporate rivalry, and a performance-enhancing broom.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
Broomgate. Available now.